Welcome to the third and final part of the CHEST webinar on unraveling cases of sepsis with Alice Gallo, Katie Pendleton, Enghao Kaus, and Chris Carroll, supported by a grant cooperative agreement from the CDC. In this final case, the panel discusses the likelihood of sepsis in a hypoxic patient with additional complications.
So now case three, Enghao, you're gonna be the first one taking this one, and then we'll go around again. So you have a patient who was admitted to the ICU 4 days ago with acute hypoxemic respiratory failure secondary to intra-abdominal pathology. Okay, you can choose pancreatitis, gallstones, trauma, and was complicated by ARDS. This patient was on general wards for 48 hours and received appropriate treatment before he or she came hypoxemic to your ICU, okay? On arrival to your ICU, they were intubated. They have undergone two proning sessions. They have been on lung protective ventilation since intubation. And they also have required paralysis due to severe refractory hypoxemia, okay? Patient has been on Zosyn since the admission to the ICU, and on rounds today, they are febrile, hypotensive, and tachycardic. So we're in the hospital 2 days before coming to your ICU with ARDS secondary to intra-abdominal pathology, so inflammatory ARDS, now refractory hypoxemia. In 48 hours, you already prone them twice. They are on lung protective ventilation, and you ended up needing to paralyze them for refractory hypoxemia. So what do you think? Are they septic? Are they not? What do we do?
Okay, so this has quite a bit of rich information that I think we need to dissect slowly. First of all, just based on the vital signs at the time of rounding, it's concerning for sepsis. However, there are several other factors that could be causing the hypotension and the tachycardia. I mean, this patient is paralyzed, heavily sedated. That by itself can lead to worsening hypotension. The problem again goes back to the margin of error, whether there is a septic process that we have not identified. I mean, this patient has been in the ICU for 4 days. So we have to assume probably the patient has central lines, has had an ET tube for 4 days now, probably has had a Foley as well. And he has been adequately covered with Zosyn for the intra-abdominal source. But now it's 4 days later. So we need to start thinking, number one, did the patient develop a new complication in the abdomen from the pancreatitis that needs source control? Because that could be definitely an area for a new episode of sepsis to be starting. Two is that there's no MRSA coverage. Did the patient have a positive MRSA swab when the patient arrived? And if so, there was no reason to start. But now that the patient has had other risk factors, like probably a central line or a Foley catheter, or maybe even a pneumonia, after being intubated for 4 days, is that something we need to consider covering? So what I would do is, probably image the abdomen, make sure there is not a collection that we need to drain, obtain cultures from different sources, from the blood, respiratory, and urine if there was a catheter, and potentially even broaden the antibiotic coverage until I have more information. Again, going back to the margin of error, that if this is sepsis and it was developed on Zosyn, we have to assume either that one, the organism is not being covered by Zosyn, or there's a new organism or a new infection or a new source that hasn't been controlled. So that was a long-winded to say that I will probably add vancomycin, image the belly while trying to identify other sources for infection, including yeast.
I love it. Chris, Katie, just before I go to you, but Chris, is MRSA swab as helpful in the pediatric population as it is in adults? So for adults, MRSA swab has a good negative predictive value. So if it's negative, it's unlikely that a pulmonary infection is caused by MRSA. Is it as good in PEDS?
It is. We also use MRSA swabs in our antibiotic stewardship capacity to stop the vancomycin if the patient does not have MRSA. So we use that as well. But like Enghao said, I would put this patient on vancomycin too. I know this isn't my turn yet. But.
No, it can be your turn. We can skip. It can
sure,
be
all right. It can be my turn.
Katie
can go next.
Okay, go friend.
I totally agree with my colleagues about adding vancomycin, but am I the only one that would broaden from Zosyn to something like meropenem? Because I think I probably would here, to be honest with you, right? I mean, going back to what I think I heard Angel say a couple of times, and also, you know, the framework I mentioned in the last case, right? Like, this is somebody who's too sick to guess wrong, right? Like, your margin of error for this is nothing. And I would go further, one step further, to say, like, if this is in fact sepsis, this is septic shock, right? Because there were hypotensive with signs of end organ dysfunction, right? So this is somebody with not much reserve in a setup and picture concerning for septic shock. And so this is definitely the person that is too sick to guess wrong. So I agree with everything that others said about, you know, imaging the abdomen, looking for other signs of infection or other sites of infection. But in addition to sending that MRSA, NARS, and vancomycin, I think I'm going to meropenem.
Would you add antifungal? Because I think at this point I would too, at least one dose.
Yeah, I think that would I think that's totally reasonable. I'm trying to play through my head how likely I would be to do that on rounds, and I think that maybe comes down to like how rapidly they're deteriorating, and like how quickly they're getting hypotensive. If this is somebody who's on a good amount of sedation and is now chugging along on Levofed at 0.08 or 0.1, I'm maybe going to watch, but send a beta-D-glucan or something like that. If this is somebody who's got rapidly escalating pressor doses and I'm thinking about a second pressor and stress dose steroids, then you're right. I think I'm adding mycofungin.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, I agree with Katie, although I don't think I would be so quick to start antifungals in at least in peds. I think thinking through this case, trying to imagine what I would do in real time, I would agree to change to meropenem because our margin of error is so small. But I think I would probably give it some time to work before immediately jumping to adding an antifungal. But that may be that there's a difference in the prevalence of fungal infections in adults and kids. And if there is, I'm not sure. But I wouldn't be jumping to it right now.
That's fair. And how about the rest? Would you also be thinking about like now a complicated intra-abdominal process, send them for more image and things like that?
So, I mean, in every patient in the ICU, we're always thinking about what's our treatment, what's our diagnosis. And, you know, this is a patient that we're going to be more focusing on our treatment than our diagnosis. So, you know, I think naturally we've all discussed that, you know, fluid resuscitation, inotropic support, changing antibiotic coverage. But the diagnosis is important as well. And, I would be sending laboratory assessments, blood gases, lactates. It doesn't sound to me like this patient is particularly stable enough to go to CAT scan. So I'd be doing plain films and looking for, you know, depending on what age this patient is, and what the underlying comorbidities of this patient are, they may be more prone to developing abdominal perforation. So that would be something I'd be worried about in a child or an infant. Ultrasound would be also another good idea for someone who couldn't travel, although I don't know that it would help us tremendously in our diagnosis, but it would be nice to have.
That's awesome. I love this.
And that is one of the dilemmas we face sometimes, right? We need a diagnostic test, but the patient is too unstable to go anywhere. And we have to make the decision whether that specific test, even if it means putting the patient to some degree of risk, will change the management. Because let's say this is an abscess and it needs to be drained. I mean, if we don't address that, it will get worse. And maybe the patient will even be less stable a few hours later or a day later. So it's a very difficult decision to make, but sometimes we just have to go with the patient to the CAT scanner and make sure that the nursing team has all the support and hope that there's not a code in the elevator, because those are never fun to have. But sometimes it's a very difficult decision. It all goes also with the prognosis of the patient, right? If we're talking about a patient who has other comorbidities and there are other issues, maybe it's not as wise to take that risk versus somebody who is at baseline totally functional, maybe a little bit different scenario.
Yeah.
I also want to add that we probably surgery is already involved in these in this patient, but if not, our surgical colleagues would be helpful to have, you know, aware of what's going on with this patient, because it's not unheard of that this patient might need to be explored.
They usually want the imaging, though, at least in my in the adult world.
Absolutely, they do.
And then again, in these cases that, like, in adults, for at least, which is an inflammatory process causing refractory hypoxemia secondary to ARDS, then you have that too. Like, sometimes you can't do spontaneous breathing trials because they are so hypoxic. Sometimes you can't stop paralytics because they are so hypoxic and so asynchronous with the vent that you don't have a good physical exam either.
Peds, you're really high risk for developing dead ischemic bowel. So that's trending lactate is really important for kids like this, because, you know, if it's still, if I'm watching someone like this and they are acting purely septic, and I'm able to control their blood pressure with inotropes, and I've changed their antibiotics, but their lactate is 1 point something, then I'm much more willing to ride it out. But if their lactate is continuing to climb and gets 10, 12, and is continuing to climb, I'm much more concerned about what's going on in their abdomen that I can't.
Yeah.
Does that happen in adults? Do you guys worry about that as much in adults?
Gut ischemia is always in the differential, I would say, for someone who was like getting worse abdominal process. Mm-hmm. Lactate though in adults for abdominal ischemia, they are not as reliable. Sometimes there's like 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, and the gut is all dead when they take them to the OR. So I wouldn't say that they are as reliable, but don't know if it's the same experience as Angel and Katie, but.
Yeah, I mean, this is somebody, if I was worried about something ominous going on in the abdominal cavity, seeing as assuming this person is supine, but they're already paralyzed, if I can't get them to the CT scanner, I mean, I might be thinking about like a bladder pressure or something that may actually be helpful in this patient, as opposed to like all the times we worry about it, but they're like not paralyzed and it comes back elevated and surgery is like, don't worry about it. But I think, you know, the points that others have made about, you know, the risk versus benefit and safety of, you know, going on field trips to scanners is, well taken, and just thinking about, you know, some of the other tools that you do have at your disposal that maybe don't require a field trip, that might not be as definitive as a CT scan would be, but can be a piece of the puzzle that sort of helps guide you in the right direction.
Awesome.
Yeah, going back to the lactate, I mean, the lactate can be helpful if it's going up, but up to 15% of patients with septic shock may have a normal lactate level despite being on vasopressor. So we have to rely on the other markers of perfusion, like urine output, capillary refill, mental status, although in this patient is not something we can assess because the patient is intubated and paralyzed, but kind of putting it all as a whole, as opposed to just relying on one marker, it's probably because sometimes one marker might not be helpful at all.
Absolutely. And yeah, I didn't mean to imply it was just the only marker. And I've certainly seen too many children with slightly elevated lactates and significant amounts of dead bowel.
Mm-hmm. I love this. I'm going to say a few things that I took from this amazing conversation. And I want you all to like, let me know if I got this right. The thing that I took the most was go to bedside, because everybody said urinary output, everybody said capillary refill, everybody said like some signs of physical exam. So go to bedside to make sure that your patient has sepsis or not, and if they need extra treatment. Love the fact that we talked about differences between sepsis diagnosis in adults and the pediatric population. And also love the fact that we talked about some sepsis mimickers. Again, don't forget your thyroid. Don't forget all your endocrine things. DKA can cause fever, can cause tachycardia. Don't forget rare things like pheochromocytomas. Don't forget liver failure that can be a good sepsis mimicker as well. And time to antibiotics is very important in all populations that we talked about today. Adults, babies, adolescents, old adults. So, it's always okay to stop them, but it's almost never okay to delay starting them. So those are some of the things that I took from today. So I was hoping we could go around and each of you tell me what you want your parting gift to our awesome audience to be today. So Katie, What's your parting gift? Parting pearl.
Oh, parting pearl. Respect the margin of error.
I love that. Chris, how about you?
You can always stop the antibiotics.
I love it. Ankit, how about you?
Aggressive initiating antibiotics and aggressive de-escalating and stopping as soon as possible.
I love it. My pearl is going to be go to bedside. Check that capillary refill. Check that urinary output. And thank you so much for all of you for joining me this afternoon for this CHEST podcast supported by AGGS CDC Grand Cooperative Agreement. Please go to the CHEST Sepsis Topic Collection page, and you can find the ways to reach out to us there and also leave comments and questions for us there.